This morning we want to look at a few different women whose lives and whose words affected or influenced. And if you did your homework, you know that it wasn't for the good. Bad influence. And this is kind of the beginning of the next few studies that we'll be doing that will have to deal with our marriages. And I don't know how many are married and how many are unmarried, but for those of you who are unmarried, the Lord will have something for you in these studies, so please don't shy away from doing the homework or coming just because it's on marriage. It's always good to learn ahead of time. So if one day you think the Lord has marriage for you, then if I were you, I would learn all that I can before that time comes about. I believe the Lord has given us as women a powerful position of influence, and especially as a wife and as a mother. Unlike anyone else. The word influence means the power of persons or things to affect others, especially one that operates without any direct or apparent effort, seen only in its effects. And you and I are being influenced every single day, whether we know it or not. We're being influenced by the people that we are around, and we're being influenced by the things that we see or the things that we are exposed to. And in that definition of influence, it's not just a blatant thing. It's just we know that we've been influenced because it's affected us. We've changed in some way. Our thinking has changed, or even our mannerisms have changed, or just the way that we talk can change because we've been influenced. TV influences us, magazines influence us, radio, books, just all the things that we see, and especially the people that we are around. And that's why it's very important for us to be careful what I'm exposed to. So I shouldn't be around those things that are going to influence me in a negative way or in an ungodly way. In 1 Corinthians 15:33, it tells us, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." So if we are around evil, if we are around the world and the world's influences all the time and people of the world, we will be corrupted. We will be influenced, and it will have an effect on us. Proverbs 13:20 says, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." So knowing that we are influenced, we want to surround ourselves with people and with things that will influence us for good, for godliness, for righteousness. And you can kind of think in your mind who those people are and that you really like to be around, because you like the effect that it has on you. You like what happens to your attitude when you're around them. You like what happens to your perspective when you're around them, because they turn your eyes on the Lord. They're godly people. And I don't know about you, but that's the kind of people I like to surround myself with, so that they'll rub off on me. They'll affect me in a godly way. Now, influence can be good. Influence can be bad, we know that, and influence can really be neither good or bad, it can just kind of be. And we see that in just things that you've picked up, things that have influenced you, maybe a haircut, maybe the way you dress, maybe the way you do something in your home that you've just kind of picked up from somebody else, and you just kind of, they had that effect on you because you really liked that or whatever. Nobody went out and said, you know, you need to cut your hair like this, or you need to decorate your house like this, or you need to dress like this, or whatever it might be. But it just had that effect on you. It was that indirect or unapparent influential effect. Now, you know, you can think about that for your own life and how that you've been influenced that way, or maybe you know somebody that you have influenced. If you're a mother, and you have small children, you can see the effects that you have on them. They mimic you. They copy you. You didn't teach them how to do whatever they're doing. They just copy you because of your influence on them. So if we can influence in those kind of insignificant ways, those ways that really isn't for the good or isn't for the bad, then that tells us that influence is a powerful thing. And that then I can use my influence for godliness, for good, for the Lord. Now, I believe that our greatest sphere of influence is in our homes as women. And if we're married to our husbands, and if we have children to our children, that's where we are. That's where we live. That's who sees us every single day. Then it moves beyond that to our circle of friends that we influence, and they influence us too. And we have a responsibility to influence for good, for godliness, for righteousness, to our husbands, to our children, and to our friends and everyone else around us. Now, we will automatically do this if we are Christ-like. If we have that relationship with the Lord, if we have that daily time with Him and in His Word that will influence us, that will have that effect on us, then it will make us more like Him. And if we're more like Him, then we're going to affect the people around us to be more like Him. So we have that responsibility to be that example, to keep ourselves in that place that we can have that good effect on others' lives. Now, God has created us, and He's called us as women to be a helpmeet. And when we did our introduction to this series, we talked about that, where when God created a male and female, He created the male first, He created Adam first, and then He created Eve from Adam to be by His side, to be a helper, a support, a helpmeet. So that means to me, if I am called as a wife to be a helpmeet to my husband, that tells me that I am his biggest influence. And that stops me and makes me think about that. Because sometimes we don't realize the influence we are on our husbands. He's the head of the home. Maybe he's a godly man. And we think, what would I do? I mean, he's strong. He's going to do what he wants. But if I'm that helpmeet, then I'm going to be the greatest influence in his life. Now, I didn't know that for a lot of years because I figured, I'm just me. Who cares about me? Why would I influence anybody? You don't be paying attention to me. Why would I have that effect? But after we were married a few years, and my husband pointed that out to me, and I really was stunned. Me? What do you know? Here, I thought he was always so much smarter and so much, he's so wonderful, and here I am, why would I influence him? And yet, I am his biggest influence, and that's sobering. And of course, he's my biggest influence because I respect him and look up to him, and he's my hero. So, in our marriage, we can be a help, we can be a hindrance, or we can even be a detriment in our influence to our husbands. Now, we're called to be a helpmeet. We're called to be that help, that good influence, not the bad influence, as we will see with these women who we studied this week, or even a detriment, which God forbid that we would ever even be a hindrance. Now, the Lord knows this. He created us to be our husband's helper, and He knows this, and He knows what an impact that we can make on his life. And speaking of King Solomon, now he had several thousand wives and concubines. That's a lot of influence in his life. It says, but King Solomon loved many foreign women from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. And this is the Lord speaking, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. But Solomon clung to these in love, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God. God knew, if you marry these foreign women, they will turn your heart away. They will influence you. They will have an effect upon you and turn your heart away. And he was right. Of course he was right. And Solomon's heart was turned away. To me, that's very sobering, that a woman can have that much effect, that much influence upon her husband. And certainly Solomon's was magnified. Now, we also know from Genesis that because of the fall and because of the curse, that women, our hearts, our desires will be toward our husbands, and we seek to please him. Now, if you're married and you love your husband, you seek to please him. That's what love does. It pleases. It wants to please. It wants to make the other person happy. It's love is giving. Love is a verb. It's action. It's doing. But sometimes we forget that our husbands seek to please us. They maybe don't do it in such a way that we do it that can be seen all the time. But the fact is that our husbands love us and seek to please us. So the way that we act and the things that we say can influence them, because they want to please us. Now, in saying that, if anyone's mind is going in a certain direction, really? Oh, you mean if I act and do this, then he'll want to please me so I can get this thing or do or whatever, have my way? I'm not giving anybody any ideas in that. When we use our influence in a way to get what we want, it's called manipulation. So that's not what we're talking about here. But just to realize that then the things that I say, and the things that I do, and the way that I act, my husband will want to please me in that. Now, when we were first married, you know how we did not know the Lord, so we were, of course, into the world and into possessions and things like that. And so you want. You upgrade. And I did not know that every time I said, oh, I would really like this, or I'd like to do that, or I'd like to change the carpet, or I'd like to paint, or I'd like to da-da-da-da-da, you know how we are. I had no idea what, to me, because I'm a woman, I'm dreaming out loud, really. I mean, we know that, we do that. But I didn't know that my husband didn't know I was dreaming out loud. He wanted to please me. So he's working overtime, and overtime, and overtime, and overtime, to try to please me, to change this and change that and do this and do that. Until we finally, you know, got together and discussed that. And he made me realize he loves me. He wants to please me. And every time I would say, I want this thing, he would then try to get me this thing, try to do this thing or whatever it might be, because he loves me, he wants to please me. I had no idea he wasn't even listening to me, you know, because you're just talking out loud, dreaming and all that. I had no idea. And when I realized that, I thought, that's terrible. That's mean. And then I tried to make him understand, I'm just talking. I know that I'll never get this, and who cares, you know, but you know how we are. But anyway, Delilah, you remember Delilah, Samson and Delilah? It says that she pestered Samson daily with her words and pressed him so that his soul was vexed to death and that he told her all that was in his heart. We do not want to be a Delilah. We do not want to be that contentious woman, that dripping woman. That woman is like a faucet. It tells us in Proverbs, all over Proverbs, the drip, drip, drip. And it says that the husband would rather dwell up on the housetop, the corner of the housetop, than in the house with a contentious woman. Ugh, I would rather be up there too, you know. So we don't want to be that, and we don't want to pester and pester to then cause them, like Samson. He just thought, I give in. We don't want that. So there are a few examples in Scripture for us of what not to do. Now, a few of these studies that we'll be doing concerning marriage, one in particular is everything not to do. So I'm just warning you ahead of time. A few weeks down the road when you get it, you'll know. But the last one is very encouraging. There were two women that all put together, Zeresh and Jezebel. Now, you remember a few weeks ago when we were in the book of Esther, we saw Zeresh there. She just has this little tiny verse to her name. But if you remember the story where Haman, who had been then elevated to this kind of second position to the king, and he was a very proud man, and you know, people bowed to him, and Esther, well, he had made the decree that he was going to wipe out the Jews, and Esther invited him to the banquet with the king, and he went, and he thought it was all tough, and okay, I'm the only one that went to the banquet with the king and the queen, and he leaves the banquet, and people are bowing, you know, and then he sees Mordecai, who will not bow, and it just really made him mad. And he goes home, and he tells his wife, Zeresh, and his friends how wonderful he is, how much he has, his position, all of that, that he was personally invited to this banquet, and on and on and on, but none of that matters because of this Mordecai. And then what does she do? She steps in and says, why don't you build a gallows and just kill him? Just kill him. Okay, now this is his wife. This is her influence on him. And he says, hey, that's a good idea. So what she said had this effect on him, so he builds the gallows. Now there's Jezebel. Now you know Jezebel. She is a very wicked woman, very wicked wife, who's married to Ahab, king of Israel. Now here he's the king. He has everything. He has all the riches and all everything. The only thing he doesn't have is this little tiny vineyard next to the palace that was Naboth. And he wants it. And he goes to Naboth, I'd like to buy your vineyard. How much will you sell it? I can't sell it. I don't want to sell it. No. So he gets mad. He goes into his palace and he pouts. He's the king. He has everything. And he's pouting because he cannot have this vineyard. And in 1 Kings 21, if you want to turn there, you can, or you can just listen. He went into his house sullen and displeased because of the word which Naboth had spoken to him. And then his wife Jezebel came to him and said, why is your spirit so sullen that you eat no food? So he said to her, because I spoke to Naboth, and he, give me your vineyard and sell it to me, and he won't do it. Then Jezebel, his wife, said, you now exercise authority over Israel. Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she says, you're the king. You're the man. Get up. Do something. Or I'll do something. And so she does. She writes letters to have this feast and then calls in false witnesses. So Naboth's sitting there and there's false witnesses against him that he's blaspheming. So they take him out and stone him. So, oh, there you go, husband. Here you go, Ahab. I got you what you wanted. So to me, when I look at these two women, I see that they fed their husband's pride. Now, we can look at this and we can go, why would you pick these two women as an example? My husband is not a Haman or a Ahab. Good. We don't want your husband to be an Ahab or a Haman. But your husband can go through things. He can have a bad day or have other things happen to him. And these women fed their husband's pride. You're the king. You're the man. Exercise your authority. Don't let them talk to you like that. Don't you know who you are? Come on, stand up and be a man. And then they both help their husbands find an easy way out of the situation. Build a gallows. I'll just arrange false witnesses. We'll just kill them off. We'll just take care of them. Now, of course, you can't relate to that because you would never, you know, hire a hitman to go take care of this situation with your husband. But you can think in your own mind a situation that maybe you kind of got in there and he had a hard day at work And he came home and said, well, you know, this is the way they're treating me. They're saying this, they're saying that. Now, you, as a wife, we don't want to encourage that. Okay, if your husband is a godly man, if he's a Christian man, he's already battling his flesh. He doesn't need help to make it worse. He needs help to have proper perspective so that we can influence him for the good. Now, when you love your husband, you're on his side. So sometimes that's hard because you think, well, they shouldn't talk to him. You're so wonderful. They shouldn't talk to you like that. And this is, you know how you can get where we can try to stick up for him in that way. And yet his flesh does not need that at that time. He needs his eyes to be turned on the Lord. He needs to be told, you know, you commit your way to the Lord. You do what's right. God will bring forth your righteousness. You rest in the Lord, trust in the Lord, do good. It doesn't matter what they're saying. It doesn't matter. It matters what God thinks. And we can influence in that way and by turning their eyes on the Lord and not being a hindrance or a detriment like Jezebel and Zeresh was. I mean, these you don't want a wife like that. And you can look at it and think, oh, that's just horrible. But at the same time, you can look at your own life and think, oh, I could have that tendency. So let's learn from that. And then there's Job's wife. Now, Job's wife is very interesting to me. And I don't know, I may look at her differently than you look at her. And you can take or leave my point of view. Now, you know the story of Job, where Job was a very, very wealthy man. He was a blessed man. He was a godly man. So he had God's favor upon his life. He had a large family, lots of children. They had husbands and wives, and he had a lot of land and livestock and all of that, which meant his wife also had that. Well, you know the story where God allowed Satan to come in and afflict him, to touch his life, to basically destroy everything he had. And everything he had was totally wiped out. All his children, all his possessions, everything was wiped out. And then God even allowed Satan to touch his body, and he had boils all over him. He was absolutely miserable, sitting in a heap of ashes, scraping his boils, just absolutely miserable. The only thing he had left was his wife. Now, it doesn't say anything about her other than her statement that she makes to him. And she comes to him in this condition, and she says to him, why don't you give up? Just curse God and die. Now, dead is a terrible thing to say. Obviously, it's a terrible thing to say. So what I'm going to say next, I'm not minimizing her terrible thing to say. Okay? But I look at her. Now, if Job was a godly man and God had blessed him so much, I'm assuming his wife was a godly wife and they had a good relationship. And sometimes we forget that everything she had was taken away. All of her children, everything. And now she's the healthy one and she's watching her husband sit and be in pain and be in misery. She totally loses perspective. She is totally caught up in her emotions and her feelings. She can't stand it anymore, and she just says, give up. Just give up. It's better for you to die. Curse God, get it over with, and just die. I can't take the pain anymore. And of course, he doesn't listen to her, which, praise the Lord for that. He was a righteous man, and he said, you know, woman, okay, you're a little emotional today. Instead of like the other husbands kind of going along with it. But it was out of her frustration, I believe, out of her loss, out of her bitterness that she said that. And there are times where our husbands can be going through a very difficult time. A trial that's affected your family, your children, your finances, your possessions. You're doing fine physically. You're doing okay. But you know, when you love, you hurt for the other person. And we need to be careful that we are not the kind of wife like Job's wife was that would say to our husband, you know, I don't know how you could stand it. Just give up. Just let's move. Let's get out of here. Let's do whatever, you know. Instead, we need to make sure that our perspective stays right if our husband is off. If our husband is going through this terrible, terrible trial, how much more do we need to be in the Word? How much more do we need to be on our face before the Lord, begging the Lord to give us that perspective, to give us the wisdom, to help us to be that godly influence to Him instead of taking His eyes and turning them further away from the Lord. We need to give hope. We need to be a kind of wife that would influence for the good. And I don't know how you've ever seen Job's wife, but that's the way that I see her. It's just out of that desperation, out of that love. But we need to be careful in that. Our husbands don't need that pity. They don't need the sympathy. They need the encouragement. They need their eyes turned upon the Lord. And then there was Sarah in Genesis 16. Now, God had given Abraham a promise that He would make him a great nation. From his body, he would have a son, and this great nation would come. And you know the story that time went on. And the way I see this with Sarah is that she got impatient. She knew the promise, but she wasn't willing to wait for the promise. So she wanted to help God out a little bit, and she wanted to figure out what God meant. And maybe He meant that. And we are real good figure-outers, you know, where we try to figure out the whole situation. And Sarah used her influence with her husband to manipulate the situation, to turn it out the way she thought it should be turned out. So she suggests to him, well, maybe God didn't mean it was me. I mean, I'm barren. My womb is closed. So maybe He meant you could have my handmaiden here, my servant, Hagar. So why don't you go into Hagar and everything will be fine. Now, unfortunately, Abraham listened to his wife, was influenced by his wife, and did just that, went into Hagar. Hagar conceived, and when Hagar conceived, now she thought, this is great. Hagar thought, this is great. I hear I'm going to have Abraham's baby and maybe be the mother of this nation and blah, blah, blah. And so after that, Sarah gets mad at Abraham for listening to her, basically, for doing what she wanted him to do. Has that ever happened to you? Where you kick and scream and you push and you manipulate and you fix and you work and you do all this stuff to get your way, and your husband, because he loves you and he wants to please you, he gives in, and then you think, boy, was that dumb. Why did you let me do that? You know? Well, don't go any further. The consequences of Sarah's failure there are still in effect today. Because through Hagar came Ishmael, the work of the flesh, the Arab nations that are still in conflict with the Jewish people today. And one person said, just one act of yours may turn the tide of another person's life. And isn't that true in Sarah's case? And we think that that is true with Sarah and maybe with somebody else, but not with us. Now, this is totally unbiblical, but you've all seen the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And you see, that's just a good picture of how just removing one person's influence affected a whole town. You don't know the effect that you can have on just one person that then could change everything around you. So we don't want to use our influence for manipulation. We need to be careful in our impatience. There are many wives who have caused tremendous problems in their marriage because of impatience. They have caused financial problems because they didn't want to wait for what they thought they needed. And so their husbands give in, and they pay for it for the rest of their lives. We need to wait on the Lord. Sarah should have waited on the Lord, encouraged her husband, been a godly influence in that way, and encouraged him and waited. And then our final example, which to me is the most sobering of all, is Eve in Genesis chapter 3. And that one just stops me. It's the most sobering scene concerning the power of influence. Now, everybody can kind of look at this differently. 1 Timothy tells us that Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. She was near that tree that God said, don't eat its fruit. She put herself in the path of temptation. She was tempted, she was deceived by the serpent into eating the fruit. And then it said she also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. John Phillips, in his commentary on Genesis, he says, it is possible that seeing the woman he loved in all her fallen condition, knowing there was no way he could bring her back to innocence again, and loving her as he did, he deliberately stooped down to where she was to become like her. If that is the case, Adam's sin was more serious than Eve's. He deliberately followed his heart into sin. Why did Adam take the fruit? Could it have been because of Eve's influence? Because he loved her so much and he wanted to be with her, and she gave it to him, and he knew it was deliberate. He knew. And he took. That stops me immediately and causes me to go before the Lord. What would have happened if she would have said, I just did something that I wasn't supposed to do. Go away. Don't take this fruit. Well, I mean, you can't even comprehend what would have happened then. We can't understand that. But because of her and her influence to me, I see that her husband deliberately took that fruit and ate of it. Now that shows me as a wife the place that I have in my husband's life and the responsibility that I have to be a godly influence, to only do what is right, to make sure that my life and my walk with the Lord is right, so that I can stir him to love and good works, so I can be an influence of righteousness and of godliness to him, so that I can turn his eyes upon the Lord when his perspective has gotten off. It's a sobering thing. There's a little poem that says, my influence. My life shall touch a dozen lives before this day is done, leave countless marks of good and or ill ere sets the evening sun. This the wish I always wish, the prayer I always pray. Lord, may my life help other lives it touches by the way. Lord, I pray that you would help us, first of all, Lord, to understand the influence that we do have on our husbands, on our children, on our friends. And Lord, I pray that that would drive us to our knees, that we would seek you and seek to be like you, so that by our words and by our actions, that those around us would see you and be influenced for good, for godliness, for righteousness. Lord, help us to be who you want us to be, Lord. Help us to influence for good. And Father, I pray that you would help us never forget the impact that we can have on someone else's life. Help us to represent you in your heart. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless you.